Hi, friends. Owen Locke and Rick Talley here from Locke & Company Distilling.
First off, we'd like to thank Sam and Jay at the Unfiltered Podcast for all they do in our industry, community, and more importantly, it's just good to work with great guys like them. Owen and I are Colorado natives. We've spent more than a decade perfecting our Aspen-aged rye whiskey, and we think it's well worth the wait. Rye whiskey usually isn't for the faint of heart, but we have to say this is hands down some of the smoothest rye on the market.
That comes from our 95% rye, 5% barley mash bill, and our unique aging process. We age our whiskey in smaller 30-gallon barrels for a minimum of 2 years, and then we finish the rye by adding hand-cut and hand-charred aspen discs harvested from our family property outside of Fairplay, Colorado. This artisanal process produces an extremely smooth rye with notes of light brown sugar, cinnamon, to balance the spiciness of the rye grain, truly delivering a taste like none other.
So, if you enjoy gold medal winning spirits, want to support small business, please consider making Locke & Co. Aspen Aged Rye Whiskey your next purchase.
You can find our Aspen Aged Rye Whiskey at many bars and restaurants and most liquor stores on the Front Range and throughout Colorado. Check us out at lockandcodistilling.com. That's L-O-C-K-E at lockandcodistilling.com. Cheers from Rick and Owen.
Now, to be clear, we prefer drinking to celebrate and not as a treatment for the pains of being an adult, which is why we appreciate the real estate services of our pal, Brian Campbell, because Brian knows how to handle the intricacies of residential and commercial real estate and keep us from imbibing in vain. You see, Brian is a member of the Coldwell Banker Denver West team and has been in real estate for over 2 decades and has worked with hundreds of clients who've bought and sold homes and commercial properties all across the Denver metro area. And aside from openly admitting to being a friend of the podcast, he knows what he's doing. So, if you're ready to sell or looking to buy anywhere around the area and keep enjoying craft beer just for the fun of it, give Brian a call at 720-217-9435 or leave him a message at your5280broker.com. That's your5280broker.com. And when you reach out, don't forget to ask him about the $1,000 off closing costs and no-cost one-year home warranty.
No. Where are we?
Thank God that it's on the menu today, because I told James earlier, I keep calling it former future. We're at the Black Project Spontaneous and Wild Ales.
And who are we talking to? Can you introduce yourself, sir?
Sure. I'm James Howitt. I'm the owner and
Beard.
Yeah, create head beard, yeah.
Have you done a podcast before, or is this your first one?
I have done a few.
Plenty. You've got the beard and the haircut of a guy that has done a lot of podcasts.
Well, yeah.
We've been, like I said,
a face for radio.
We've been at this long enough now that we're not actually, if they're doing it with us, they've probably done it with somebody before us.
True.
They've lowered their standards.
So what's the address?
1290 South Broadway.
And so you were just down like half a block from Dos Luches, who's been on the show.
Yes,
he has. Also are we close to?
We're going to be.
They're half a block up from us, actually.
Up. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah.
Because we were here first.
Use the lane.
Oh, true. There we go.
True.
Also true, which is
just a couple blocks
north
of that.
Yeah,
that's where I was last week, Brewing.
Alternation used to be across the street close.
Right? Rest in peace. A couple blocks south.
And they've closed, but now you've got, I mean, there's a bunch.
We can knock a couple of golf balls towards Platt Park or to the new ratio spot that's going to open soon.
How long have you been open here?
You're like beer heaven.
Declaration, right?
Formerly Declaration.
Yes.
It's a way south. There's also Grandma's house down there. I think they're probably the next closest.
Forget about them.
To the south.
So
they're tough to remember without the big inflatable grandma on the roof anymore.
That was wild.
That was the thing they did?
Oh, man, it was awful. Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say it was awful. It was awfully impressive. Big.
It was big, yeah.
So, I mean, you've seen some when did you open, I guess?
February 2014.
So you've been here over 7 years now.
Yep.
Yeah. Right, if I can do the math.
Old school. Yeah. OG right here.
We were, I think, the 30th brewery in Denver proper to open. So and at our one-year anniversary, there were 60.
Holy shit.
Just Denver
shit.
Proper. Yeah.
Holy cow! So what happened? I'll stop cutting you off. I'm being a terrible.
Well, listener. No, there's nothing. That's I don't know what happened. People decided to open breweries.
What made you decide here? Because at that time, there wasn't a lot, you know, on where we are. There was, you know.
There's still not a lot, really.
Yeah. Broadway was under construction back then, too, right?
It was right before, it ended before we opened. But when we leased the place, it was pretty, like, dug up. It was like a trench. You couldn't even turn left. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, they took it all the way down.
Yeah, and there's like a, it's called Innovage. It's like a senior living place. Or not senior living, but it's like senior activity center kind of thing.
Okay.
I don't work for them.
But you're not a senior citizen.
But they're across the street from us. So they truck folks in from like senior living centers, I think, to do like activities and medical stuff.
Okay.
That was not open yet. We were like getting ready to open. We're like, oh, what's it going to be like? Something really cool.
Yeah.
There's no crossover there. So that's unfortunate. We were basically, like super stoked. Like, oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah. It's like a bingo hall. More or less,
right? Yeah. That would actually be much cooler than what it is.
That would actually be cooler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead, you said the occasional straggler
they're literally fenced in. There's a fence.
Oh god!
Yeah, I think just because of like dementia patients, so they are right shuttled right on and off the buses, and we can't even get any crossover.
He's not kidding. I'm turning around right now.
I've seen it for years. I know exactly what he's talking about. All inclusive, innovative, all inclusive. Something or other, man, and they advertise on the radio. Yeah. I'm sure it serves a very great purpose.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure it's great. Not really benefit. This brewery in particular.
They just don't. They're not allowed to come over here.
Have you ever thought about just like handing out crowlers as they're getting off the bus?
That's actually. No, I haven't. Things. But that should be something we try.
Yeah.
Right off as marketing. Of for sure.
You could partner with the CBD shop next door and they could hand out shit too.
Yeah, yeah. They're probably down too.
Are you from Denver?
No.
So what got you out here?
I grew up in the Chicago area.
Okay.
Spent a little bit of time in New Jersey and then came out here for college. In Fort Collins.
And Fort Collins is a long way from South Broadway. So
tell us
the story.
I went to school for biology, microbiology, but I wanted to be a high school science teacher.
Okay.
And it was very difficult to get a teaching job in Fort Collins off the bat. So I got a job in Commerce City.
Okay.
Where it's pretty easy to get a teaching job. So did that for 5 years. So, yeah.
So 5 years, that gets us to what? Like, what year did you graduate college?
2008.
2008. So you're teaching for 5 years. Yep. What were you making beer in the garage?
Yeah, I was homebrewing. I started homebrewing in college. I wasn't even a big beer fan. Like, I wasn't super into drinking beer. Didn't like the taste that much.
Yeah.
But I was into like the microbiology of it.
Okay.
And so I had two roommates at the time. We lived in the house, and Alex and Nick, and we were. I was homebrewing, and they were mostly drinking it. And I was like, is it good, though? Does it taste like Fat Tire? Because this is a Fat Tire clone, you know. I think it tastes like Fat Tire, but they're like, yeah, it tastes great. Keep making it, you know.
Okay. So you knew you could do it.
Yeah, so I started doing that. And it's, you know, and then after college, I got more into, first of all, I started liking beer at some point. Before the end of college.
That was going to be my next question. So
there was a 3-month period where you didn't like beer, then all of a sudden,
like it, but I mean, homebrewing kind of taught me to like beer, because I was drinking a bunch of different styles, learning what should I make, and I was like, amber ale sounds good, or whatever, and I had a friend who worked at New Belgium and got just gobs of their beer, so my first craft beer was undoubtedly New Belgium beer, Fat Tire 1554, this is like super typical entry level like craft beers, I think.
No judgment though. I mean, there's a tree that we've talked to enough in this, you know, on this show. I mean, you have your New Belgium tree, you have your Odell tree, Great Divide tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, this town's got those, so it makes total sense that was your influence. I mean, I think for a lot of us,
a Collins student for sure, right?
Like,
and it was free, which was why it was New Belgium.
Free is even better.
Yeah, could have done fine with Odell too, but this guy worked there. Yeah, packaging line or whatever. Like, not a brewer, but just, you know, labor. And he got to bring home, like, cases and cases of beer. So
you're making beer. You're giving it to your friends. They're drinking it, but you're also getting kind of feedback from college kids. What made you, after the day that you graduated college, to that last year as a high school science teacher, realize I can make something larger of this? Like, what was it? Obviously, you got to think about your beer being good, but what else? I mean, like, what else?
Yeah, I mean, I got really into doing, like, a lot more serious brewing than what I was doing in college. So I was isolating wild yeast and doing a bunch. I was into the microbiology aspect, which to me, the microbiology aspect slants heavily towards wild stuff that other people aren't doing.
Okay.
The microbiology of just buying yeast from a lab and using that is pretty straightforward.
So I was
doing some wild stuff like that. I was still making normal beers, but also experimenting with sour wild stuff that was truly wild yeast. While I was a teacher, and
were you doing it in at school? Like,
I was gonna say,
like not in all seriousness, school, but could school. You not brewing school. There? But could you use the? I mean, I would assume you had equipment there that you could mess around with,
or
no?
Yeah, I didn't necessarily need it too much. There was probably a few times when I was able to, you know, use an autoclave kind of thing,
there, yeah,
or something for something. But I never really crossed it too much. We definitely used yeast for various experiments and stuff with my biology students as far as understanding cell metabolism and things.
As a teacher, I've got to ask, did they know that you were making beer on the side?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, we talked about it. But yeast, Saccharomyces is also really like a model organism as far as like cell metabolism kind of thing. It's really easy to, you know, what happens when you put sugar in the yeast water and like, you know, what is the cellular process that's making? It's making CO2 and alcohol, and why?
Uh-huh.
Chemically. So
I'm just thinking, as a high school student, if my teacher was making beer at home, that would, Mr. Cummings would have been the coolest guy ever.
He might have been, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot more attention, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My science teachers in high school bored the shit out of me. One was a retired nun.
Jay,
yeah,
all your teachers bored the shit out of you. Okay. It's all right.
There's a problem there.
We're here.
But yeah, I mean, you're right. There's the fact that this guy was able to take science in a high school environment and make it cool and apply what he was ultimately going to do in beer. And God knows how many kids that he taught at one point actually appreciate beer better now, or maybe true. Even
it's possible.
Yeah, brew beer because of you. I'm not assuming or implying anything. I'm just thinking out loud. I mean,
yeah, they definitely knew about it. I taught for the last few years. I taught like AP biology, so it was like college level biology.
So you were teaching the smarter kids.
Yeah, people who got put in that group for sure.
Yeah, I would have never been in that class.
And juniors and seniors, so they were a little more
advanced,
able to understand. Like, yeah, I mean, this is part of beer making, but also there's a freaking reason why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
It's not just because like beer.
Right.
Because like some freshman kid would be like, oh my God, he's just doing some beer stuff, you know? And honestly, the principal wasn't smart enough to understand the concept of what I would explain to them.
Yeah.
The principal probably couldn't have passed the AP bio class, especially the principal last couple of years.
Shots fired.
Yeah.
So related to that, I realized.
Also not smart enough to download podcast episodes.
Yeah, no,
he's
no.
100% not a severe beer podcast. My first principal, cool guy. If he might not be listening to this either, but related to administration, I was a really good teacher. Like, I was winning awards and stuff, but I didn't want to do it for 20 more years.
Okay.
And I, you know, as part of that, I would obviously be like, well, I should go work in a different district.
Uh-huh.
Didn't want to do that either. I just realized this wasn't going to be something I wanted to do for 20 years.
Okay.
And I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to work in the beer industry. Looked into working for another brewery, got offered a job at like Twisted Pine, was going to take it. Was talking to my dad, who's also a microbiologist, and he was like, you know, you can do better than like an entry level, like your knowledge level's higher than an entry level like brewer. You understand microbiology, you have a degree in this stuff, like, so why don't you aim higher? I was like, well, you got to get your foot in the door. And he's like, well, then go to brewing school. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to go to brewing school. And then I was like, well, brewing school's 2 years and $45,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was like, if you have $45,000, why don't you get some other people to contribute money and open a brewery? So that's what I did.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
that's my whole,
I guess I got to ask though, like, but why, you know, why did you go brewery route and not maybe what Matty Peetz did, which is, you know, start his own lab, right? Or go to White Labs and do,
for sure.
But what made you think you wanted to do that instead of, you know, doing what he's done?
Like working in a lab was never really
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Does this guy look,
if I was
like
gonna work in a lab,
white coated lab?
No, I could.
No, he doesn't look like Matt Peetz.
If I wanted to work in a lab, I would have gone to work in like a pharma lab.
Yeah,
I've probably got connections there that could probably have made a lot more money than brewing. to me, I mean, if you're moving stuff with pipettes, it's just as interesting and probably a lot more interesting to do stuff that's not beer related.
Because
honestly, all the microbiology in a beer lab is pretty simple. It's not to offend anybody, but like I mean, the stuff that's going on, and honestly, some of the more advanced, like there's gene editing and stuff coming into brewing, but I mean, not to the level that's happening in other level, and also the pay is not the same. So it's like you could do cooler stuff if you want to work in a lab. You could do cooler stuff.
Yeah.
You know, more advanced stuff probably that would keep you more interested.
Sorry, I keep cutting you
it's
off.
It's not our interview today.
No. You go ahead. I'll keep mine right
Sam's
here.
Interview.
No,
go ahead. Ladies and gentlemen, Unfiltered with Dr. Sam J.
Sorry, Jay. Jay Schrader.
No, I'm just blown away by the simple fact. We've talked to a lot of people that felt like brewery school, I don't want to say it was the smarter thing, right? But that's the route they went. And your dad seems like a smart guy that was like, well, if you got $45,000,
yeah,
why waste it on brewery school and then have to shit out another $45,000 to start your own brewery?
Yeah,
why not just start your own brewery?
I'm not knocking the concept.
No, and neither am I. We know a lot of people that did brewery school, brewing school.
I think the cool thing about going to brewing school is you can go work and you can be on the production floor. I don't like the guys, but you can go be on the production floor in Anheuser-Busch facility, which is a union job, and you make a lot of money. Don't tell.
Really?
Don't tell the craft brewing world, but like, they all know. But like, you know,
you can make a living at it.
You make a lot more money.
Interesting.
In those jobs. I mean, I know people who made pretty good money, like putting in like coriander and orange peel into Blue Moon or whatever. Just from when I was teaching, is somebody who I worked with, their wife worked at Coors, and that's all she did. She made like not tremendous amount of money, but like for the job.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't even go to brewing school. She's got a job like working in a factory.
Just doing
basically.
That. I quit. I'm done doing it.
Just gonna go do that.
Yeah. So, but there's, you know, arguably there's not a lot of heart in that, and you don't have any creative control at all.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So
yeah, you strike me as a little bit more of an individual.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it's been a long time doing my own thing, so I can be more.
You can do what you want now. Yeah.
What were you drinking in those 5 years as a teacher that kind of really piqued your?
A lot. Anything I could get my hands on. I was a teacher.
Were you drinking your beer, or were you drinking whatever?
I was home brewing. But I was. You know, it's another New Belgium beer. That's when I. Early on in that, I drank La Folie for the first time, which is like a sort of like, I guess it's like an Udbrun, I guess I would call it now, but it's a sour beer. It was my first like sour beer.
Okay.
I was like, oh, this is my thing. I always liked Skittles and.
Yeah.
You know, like Skittles? Yeah. Is that what you just
Jolly
said?
Jolly Ranchers. Like that's just, awesome. You know, sour stuff.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, oh, this is cool. Like
in a beer.
Yeah, it took me a long time to be really into like super bitter. And this is at the time, people don't know this anymore, but this is the time when people are like, it's 10,000 IBU.
Yes, yes.
People are like,
yes.
I want that one.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, I can drink those now, but I would never order it. I just order lagers now pretty much. But
What was the brewery scene at that time? I mean, you're obviously living in Commerce City. Were you living in?
No, I did not live in Commerce City.
Or sorry, you were teaching there.
I was teaching there. you never want to teach where you live.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, I feel like you want at least a 20-minute commute.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be just running into your kids.
Or their parents.
I need to share that information with my wife.
Yeah.
That's not anything against Commerce City. It's just, to me, I wouldn't want to live in the same district. And most teachers I know don't.
Yeah.
I lived in Thornton for 1 year, and then I moved down to Denver.
Where were you going? Where were you drinking beer?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I was going to Falling Rock a little bit. Okay. You know,
rest
just
in peace.
Yeah. Recently, rest in peace. And also just going to liquor stores and getting bottles of stuff.
Okay.
I remember like Funkworks.
Yep.
I was drinking Funkworks. They were early on, and then when it got closer to time to opening, I was pretty sure I wanted to do it. I was living over quite near True Brewing.
Okay.
And I was going there quite a bit, and I was also in a homebrew club.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to this homebrew club, and it was meeting at OMF, our mutual friend.
Yep.
And I remember there was a time when some guy who doesn't own a brewery now was
might be able to figure this out.
And I have no idea who he is. Oh, okay, but he doesn't own a brewery, I can tell you that. And I was talking with Justin Bakery, Station 26, and who else? We were at OMF. They had just opened. And Sean from Cerebral.
Okay. Yep.
And so we're all at the same homebrew club. Me, I don't get the sense any of us was like a regular attendee, but we were all there at the OMF at the same time.
What a night!
But we were all just homebrewers that wanted to open breweries, and this guy was like super condescending. He was like, "Yeah, we're all going to open a brewery." You know, let me know.
And then three out of four of you.
All, but yeah, the only guy who didn't open a brewery was the guy who was talking shit. I mean, it's pretty wild. Like, imagine being that guy. He probably doesn't even know.
Yeah.
But imagine if he did.
I bet that guy
He's
listens.
Probably like, well, fuck.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I don't know if I can cuss on this, but anyway.
Oh, please do.
Okay.
You're living in Denver.
Yeah.
You're homebrewing. You're going around. But
so
how did we get here?
I got some investors, like friends of friends, basically. Not too many people I knew super well, but...
Okay.
I was also married at the time, so it was friends of that family and a bunch of people.
Okay. We do therapy separately, so we don't record those.
We don't.
There's no therapy required.
Off the books.
Everything's been aired publicly, I'm
based,
sure.
Based on the smile, he's fine now.
So I was living by True. Got some of our first investors, and I remember walking to True, and Nick, the owner, didn't, you know, it's like he was still bartending back then, and he... He didn't know I was going to open a brewery, but I heard at one of those homebrew club meetings he was selling some fermenters, and I was like, Nick, I want to buy your fermenters, and they sit right behind me right now.
Oh, so that's hilarious.
So I
sat with
Nick.
I got
my first investor check, and I was like, you selling those? And he was like, yeah, some people are interested online. I was like, I'll give you money now.
Right now.
And that's he was funny. Like, no shit, what's going on? I was like, yeah, I'm opening a brewery. And he was like, cool, well, money talks, you know? So
that's awesome.
A bunch of people were like apparently pretty pissed at him online, like I'm pro brewer, because he was like, yeah, man, yeah, you know, cool. And he's like, some guy just came in with a check last night, so, and he's local, so I don't know what to tell you.
You're doing
shit happens, right?
Brewed some test batches, commercial test batches at OMF, actually.
Okay.
But at the time, I mean, True and OMF, Renegade, there were not so many breweries in Denver. And then by the time we opened, there were a few more, but.
Why this spot? Like, why South Broadway? Oh, was I just serendipitous, or was it?
We didn't want to be too close to another brewery.
Okay.
Good call.
Yeah. Didn't want to be too close to another brewery, and there wasn't really one in this neighborhood. Platte Park didn't exist yet.
Okay.
True was the closest one, and they're pretty far away.
Yeah.
They're definitely not walking distance.
No, I've done it before, but only by necessity.
I was going to say, yeah, you were feeling pretty good at the time. Yeah, too.
That was before Lime scooters were open.
It's probably safer. You're
back
here.
Then you just had to hike it.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm wondering what's going on with our menus right now. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
Hey, Jet. The hell's going on there? Where? I mean, I'm sure.
While James is being an owner, this place is really cool.
Yeah, you've never been in here.
No.
I love this place.
No.
As far as I'm concerned.
This place is awesome.
Where else do you get to sit on an aircraft wing?
We're live right now. People are listening.
Fucking cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, our menu board just went completely fucking
bonkers.
Wonky. So, yeah, I don't know. Bartender, never seen that before.
Bartender just got busted for not paying attention.
Come on, man.
It's good that he doesn't have to look at the menus, but...
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Where'd you get the airplane wings?
From an airplane junkyard. So.
Like, where does one of those exist?
Haven't you ever seen Con Air? It's in the middle of the desert.
It won an Academy Award, right?
I think it was up in Commerce City, actually.
Oh, he's driving home from school one day, and he was like, hey, that looks like an airplane wing.
We hired some people to do it for us, but they found it, and it was, I think it was in Colorado. It's a Cessna we think it's a 140.
That's so cool.
And it was originally that's a ragwing plane, like a fabric plane, but it's an aftermarket aluminization kit.
Oh.
So when you have a ragwing plane, if you like accidentally look at it wrong, you poke a hole in it, and now it's like fucked. You got to patch it. You know, like crispy fabric. So. It's relatively common to buy a kit to make it aluminum, like a later one.
Oh.
And that's what this was, we think.
That's probably like the most valuable stretch of bar in all of the city right here.
I don't know. I mean,
it's a lot of aluminum.
We paid quite a bit of money for that bill.
Yeah.
So,
have you ever been to there's a place in Colorado Springs. There's an airplane it's a restaurant. It's the worst thing in the world. Don't ever take your kids there. You have kids? You probably don't have kids. You have kids.
I have a few.
Yeah, you have kids. It's terrible. It's about 107 degrees in there, and the food's terrible. I'm just saying. It just reminds me.
Looks like an airplane.
It's an airplane. Yeah. No, it's close to the airport, but it's not great.
Okay.
Yeah, we went down there with some friends one time, and
there's
they wanted to take.
You drove all the way down there for an airplane.
No, we stayed down there. We went to the zoo. You know, you do stuff that you do with your kids, you know, just try to get them away, have a little weekend away many years ago. I wouldn't say it was a successful trip, but You know, the dads, the dads drank some beer.
Clearly, the restaurant left a mark.
No,
on you.
No, it was the mozzarella sticks were okay.
Let's unpack that box.
Mozzarella sticks are always okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can't go bad.
I've never
had
a bad mozzarella stick.
That is,
I've had some bad mozzarella.
I
mean, sticks.
Where?
I don't need mozzarella sticks. That sounds like garbage.
What? He's lactose. I mean,
it is
intolerant.
Like garbage to you.
I don't like
it's
any of that.
It's like garbage
shit.
To everybody.
Yeah, it's not good for your body. Yeah, no, like nobody's.
I prefer the beer part of the not good for my body.
I think mozzarella sticks are like sex. Even when they're bad, it's still pretty good.
I can't.
You know what? I'd probably appreciate cheese a whole lot more if I looked at it that way.
It depends, though.
Cheese,
especially because I haven't had a mozzarella stick in a while. If we're talking about,
so you open up. Okay, go ahead.
I want to know about. I want to know more about planes.
We haven't even gotten. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Because paper airplane is a bit of the logo. You've got a wing. That's is it all just random coincidence, or
yeah,
is there,
it is
there
a
like an underlying?
So the plane thing came, the airplane thing. So when we opened, we were former Future Brewing Company.
Thank you for actually.
Yep. So Black Project was a side venture thing, and the plane and the sort of like somewhat spy plane, spy program, Black Project type of thing.
Okay.
Most of our names are named after some sort of government program or test plane or something like that. Sometimes we get a little bit weird with like alien shit.
There's some Area 51
stuff. Yeah, there's some Area 51 stuff. Yeah.
Where's Pizzagate? I don't see that.
Pizzagate, we don't go into those.
No, that's a CIA job.
Aliens and CIA. Yeah, I mean, that's like the best combination of both.
And pedophiles. Like all of them. You get everything together.
We try to avoid pedophiles and Nazis. Okay. As a rule.
After that, everything else is off limits.
We don't generally have, even though the Nazis had some cool names for some of their stuff. We're like, we're just not going to do anything with Nazis.
Can confirm. They knew how to name some projects.
They had some, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, translations, obviously, but you're like, oh, it's a fucking good name.
Yes.
Nah, I'm not going to do it.
Yes.
Sorry.
I mean, no.
Wow.
No, I think we've made plenty of Nazi jokes on this show. Yes.
Good to know.
Yeah, they got pretty Harriet Bierstadt.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no, we don't need to talk about Nazis, but that's kind of our thing with naming. We don't go to Nazi stuff, but... So actually part of the reason for the airplane, the paper airplane logo is that, like, you know, it's, we like airplanes, we like stuff like that. We're also not really like super into weapons of war, and we're not trying to make it like,
yeah.
I speak only for myself, but I'm like a pretty pacifistic, like, would rather we not have government black projects, and I like spy planes. I think they're cool, and I like stealth planes and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's cool shit. But also I'd kind of rather we didn't.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of.
But I appreciate technology of it. I think they're neat, but they're neat for what they for the fact that they're fast and cool looking and stuff, and they have cool names sometimes. But
it's almost tongue in cheek then to some.
It is a bit.
Right?
That's why it's paper airplane.
Like
right?
This is
nobody's
a,
scared
this
of a paper.
Is a,
that's why it's a black paper airplane.
Smart, sophisticated,
looks
kind of
like a stealth fighter,
but
it's just
a paper airplane. Like,
yeah,
it's accessible still. Right?
We're certainly not.
I'm not on that level anymore. I've lost it. I've lost my edge. My critical edge is gone. You just beat me to it.
I did, yeah.
That will never happen again.
Yeah. No,
ever.
It definitely will.
My gosh,
you're
now. I am. I feel like I got to hang out with you and Dan more. That's the key, right? For sure. What are you looking for when you make a beer? Knowing that, you know, this is wild ales, right? Like you're having some fun. You're experimenting. So
it's
like,
not wild like that. It's wild like Wild East.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I understand.
But no. So I mean. You know, we're ultimately usually looking for balance and for always trying to let the microbes speak also. Like,
so can you? But I guess as a you know, two dudes who don't brew our own beer outside of a Mr. Brew Kit, what does that mean during the course of brewing that beer for you to taste something that you know is going to get to that endpoint where you want it to be? What are you looking for? You know, week by week, day by day.
So a big difference is, I mean, most of the people, I'm guessing all the people you've interviewed probably spend usually 7 to 14 to maybe 24 days, 28 days making the beer.
Yep.
Our beer is often 8 months, sometimes as many as 28 months.
Okay.
Holy shit.
Average age. So it's a very different process in that way. We also, in general, only make 2 or 3 different recipes. So, you know, like David just finished brewing right now, but he's brewing right now. If he was brewing right now, he doesn't know what that beer is going to be.
Yeah.
We just make stock and then we blend. And so it's really about blending.
Okay.
And our name predates the whole like brewing and blending maybe becoming really popular.
or blendery or whatever.
But, yeah.
But that's really important, more than maybe other places. You know, we have to blend our beer. It's blended to make the beer. So we're going to put raspberries in it or whatever. We blend it knowing that.
Okay.
It's kind of cool because, you know, you make regular beers. You're just making sugar water. It doesn't taste anything like the end product. And you have to know what you're doing to make it set up to taste like the end product. But we have to know what we're doing for what's going to happen months and months down the road.
Okay.
But then we get to taste essentially finished beer and combine it with fruit or whatever we're doing, which is kind of neat because you don't normally get to do that. If you make an IPA, you're like, you pretty much are committed at the beginning. You're like, we're doing this, we're putting the hops in, and it doesn't taste like an IPA until it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it either sucks or it doesn't.
Yeah, you dump
it
or you don't. Cross your fingers.
Yep. We dump a lot of beer. We dump about 20% of our barrels.
You do.
That's in line with Belgian breweries doing lambic, which is essentially what we do. And so, yeah, but it's a blended process. So we can say, oh, this is, you know, if we're going to put a crap load of raspberries in, those are really tart, we might make a blend that's less tart. The beer is not that sour, right?
Or, and you rely on the raspberries to do
right,
the work.
Right. So, but we get to choose that. Whereas if we were brewing it, it's and just making it all at once, you don't really get to choose or control that. You can try to control it, different things, but.
So you kind of let the beer do its thing. You let the yeast do its thing.
Yeah, and then we're tasting the finished product. So, yeah. So the process of us making beer is a lot more like blending a whiskey or blending wine.
Okay, I was going to ask that question. I mean, it sounds to me somewhat like a whiskey process.
Yeah, I mean, they don't make different that many. Most distilleries are making a base,
right?
Yeah,
a bourbon base or whatever. There's a few different ones, but. When they go to blend it, there's many different barrels. They all taste different, and then they make a blend. And
then they're shooting for an end product.
Yeah.
So with whiskey, I feel like they taste it along the way. Do you do something similar when you're aging your beers and you're blending them and aging them? Okay.
Yeah.
I noticed you have, which as much as I feel like I was here in a previous life, I never noticed that barrel aging room. But you have a pretty substantial barrel aging room back there.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we should have done the tour. But, yeah, we have about 130 oak barrels.
Okay.
Like 60-gallon former wine barrels and, I think, 10 or 12 puncheons, which are, like, double size. And then we have four
thanks so much,
fooders, which are very large, 15 barrel, and one is about 10 barrels.
So I'm guessing that when you pick out your barrels, it's a little bit different animal than what a lot of the barrels that you and I see in breweries, right? Not to bag on laws, but, you know, a lot of laws barrels, but you are actually probably going, you got a little bit more of a hands-on process when you're picking those things out, or no? Maybe I'm wrong.
No, so the barrels themselves, I don't care much about.
Okay.
The barrel chooses the brewer.
Yeah, apparently. So we use those barrels multiple times. Okay. So we added that room, and those barrels have all been in there for the most part.
Okay.
And we're not putting them in barrels for flavor necessarily. Like, we're not trying to make red wine flavor.
Okay.
But generally wineries use the usually for white wine and then maybe red wine, and then the oak character is gone.
Okay.
So it's a neutral barrel. Okay. And that's what we use. And it's mostly out of tradition, and it's an inexpensive aging vessel.
Ah.
So it's just a container as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, container with a certain amount of oxygen ingress. We use mostly French oak, which is a tight pour. Wood, so we're getting a little bit less oxygen in than like American oak.
Okay.
We do some stuff with like Laws barrels. We actually got the first barrel from Laws of any brewery.
Cheers to that.
Yeah, it was before they were called Laws. It's actually up there in our front, right by the front door. They were just operating under Gargoyle Spirits.
That's right.
That's crazy. You know that? Dude, I didn't know any of that. No, I'm ignorant to this.
You are. So,
I feel like such a chump.
So we do that, but that's when we get the barrel character.
Okay.
But generally, then we're blending from those other barrels.
Okay.
And then it just goes in there for maybe 8 weeks or 12 weeks or something to get that bourbon character, that oak character.
Uh-huh.
But the other barrels we use indefinitely. We steam clean them in between uses.
Okay.
We're really trying to like just make it a neutral vessel, no microbes from the previous run, no flavor from the previous run. And we can use them indefinitely. I mean, there's breweries
in
Belgium that pretty much have been using barrels for years and years.
Really?
That's code for like hundreds of years is what I just heard.
Maybe. Yeah.
You have to treat the outside?
There's not really anybody in Belgium making. Lambic's only been around for about 200 years. Nobody's really been doing it for that long continuously that I know of. I don't think so. So
About these barrels back here? Some of these are like the biggest barrels.
Yeah, so those are seen. We call those fooders. So they're just bigger. Yeah, thicker. Okay. The wood is thicker, so you get less oxygen ingress.
Okay.
And it's also just like a geometry thing where as you make something bigger, the surface area goes down for the amount of volume.
Okay.
So one thing we don't some distilleries might make their whiskey in 10-gallon barrels, and generally that's somewhat frowned upon because the point is there's much more surface area to volume there, and so they're getting the oak really, really fast and the oxygen really, really fast.
Okay.
So they can age this is a speedy way to do it.
I was going
to
say almost like a cheat.
It's just a faster way. Like you can call it a cheat or not.
No, I shouldn't say cheat.
I don't know enough about whiskey to call it a cheat, but I would say there's probably some whiskey people
it's
who
would call
it a
cheat. It's just an expedited process.
It's faster, for sure. Oh, which, okay. If you're, you know, if it's cheaper, then it's fine. But if they're charging the same amount as something that maybe took longer, I'm like, well, what the hell?
Yeah, true. No, I feel like we've done this a lot, and we've talked to a lot of smart people, but like actual science.
Mm-hmm.
James here. Hands down, probably the smartest person we've ever met.
I'm just a real big nerd, basically.
So. Well, so are we, but you've actually managed to.
I don't know it could be a dog hair on that. I apologize.
Probably my dog's hair.
So I think it's probably mine. It's a pug hair. Yeah.
We don't
want to
know.
Yeah, no. What do you want us to know, like, you know, as we kind of close up shop here? I feel like we could have talked for another hour and a half.
I got to run, but feel free to.
No, I feel bad. I'm already 15 minutes late.
It doesn't bother me.
If we'd gotten an email or a text or something.
What's the future of Black Project? I mean, I know it sounds silly, but and you don't want a business plan, but you do own this place, so.
Yeah, I think my goal is actually probably to not make any more on a growth basis.
Yeah.
Wow. In fact, we might make less next year.
And you're okay with that?
Yeah, because I'd like the beer to be older. I'd like to focus more on what we call the spontaneous stuff, like the lambic stuff, which is what's in the barrels now. It's what's going into bottles. I'd like to get more of that into cans.
Okay.
The canned stuff is made with environmental wild yeast, but it's not lambic style. I'd like to move that towards cans. I'd like to also... You know, it's possible that in the next 6 months there'll be like a side project to the side project that is kind of going back and making other kinds of beers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have the tap room here, and I like making sour beer, but I also like making other beer.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be fun to get to go back to that a little bit.
I told you on a small scale. Yeah, I told you when I got here, I kept Googling Former Future instead of Black Project. And it was funny because the menu that it pulled up for Former Future, I wasn't really thinking about it, and I walked in expecting a very different menu. I haven't been in here in a couple of years, and I was looking for the Pilsner that I saw online right before I left.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I was looking at the wrong fucking
menu altogether. Something out there, but I guess nothing ever goes away online.
Yeah,
so.
Clearly. That's
we switched over the tap room in August 2016. Okay. So we've been Black Project a lot longer than we were Former Future.
Sure.
And to me, it's like, people are like, why don't you just have Black Project make some beers with lab yeast or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, if I'm in a band and I make electronic music, but I want to make a metal band, I make a new band.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a different kind of music. It's a different kind of beer. And I think that I'm so like ADD and like, I want to do all these different things. And to me, my creativity is best restrained purposefully. So Black Project is like, we only use environmental wild yeast. Boom.
Yep.
That's pretty limiting.
Give yourself some guardrails.
That's limiting to the point where there's maybe only, I don't know, 30 or 40 breweries in the U.S. to do it.
That's
out of 4,000 or 5,000. So it's like, you know, it's pretty limiting. But we still like to play around with some other stuff. That means it might have to be under a different sort of name.
Will it all happen under the same roof?
Yeah, it'll be the same roof, yeah. And also, to be fair, it doesn't all happen under this roof. We have warehouse space outside of here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think. This is probably about 4,000 square feet. Okay. So we have about 4,000 other square feet. It's purely warehouse.
Interesting.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of half
production. That's brewery operations still.
Yep.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So we do mobile canning. So the canning comes in there, and that's where we hold our can inventory to go out to shipments to distributors and various stuff like storing.
That's where the parties are.
No, the parties are here.
Well, this is the place to have a party.
Yeah, this is the place to have the party.
James, what are you most proud of?
We make a beer called Oxcart, which is a three-year blend of lambic-style beer, which is just like a Belgian goose. It's made in the same way. It's not on tap because it can't be on tap. Goose has to be fermented in the bottle, pre-fermented in the bottle. We have bottles, I think, but it averages 26 or 7 months old. It's 1, 2, and 3 year blend. We do it multiple times a year, and it's unfruited. It's purely blending of our lambic style barrels, and that's like, to me, that is really the core of Black Project, and like everything comes from there. Unfortunately, it's not the most popular thing because people like tons of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they want marshmallow in it. They want whatever it is. We never put marshmallow in a beer, by the way.
Spaghetti.
But yeah, we also not that. But to me, that's like it's just like stripped down, and like when brewers come here, that's what they want to drink.
They want to do
because they understand like that's an expression of blending, and it's there's nothing to hide behind. There's no fruit. It's just beer. And it's just blended beer, and it's really old and 100% spontaneous, and that's probably my most proud thing. We've done that for quite a few years now, and it's probably my favorite thing. So
get down here.
I was gonna say, is that something somebody can walk in?
You can buy it by the bottle. Yeah.
Well, I'll be taking two of those. Yeah.
Exactly.
We sometimes put it on tap, but like I said, if it's on tap, it hasn't been conditioned in bottles for 6 months, so it doesn't meet the requirements. For what we would call...
It's close enough.
So we call that Snark when it's on tap. It's a different beer. So it's essentially kegged Oxcart.
Gotcha.
I dig it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well... Hey,
James, let us know when the next band comes around.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like that's a whole other interview.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, potentially.
I mean... Again, we could talk for a while, but we can't. We got to come back.
There's actually a whole other interview.
I know. You've been here.
We didn't even get into yeast, and we didn't even get to the...
No,
to the...
all of that. To our listeners, we're going to have to come back here because we're at 45 minutes, and I don't want to go over that anymore because people don't listen. So we'll come back for part two.
Do they listen at all?
They do, actually. Oh, okay, yeah. Good. Our cidery interview exploded. So
I got some hype today on... comment. So
I listen to real long podcasts. I just want to say.
I do too, but usually they're murder show podcasts.
I listen to like a 23-hour World War One podcast.
Is it Dan Carlin's? Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It was wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can do it. We can't. So we are not Dan Carlin.
We should like shadow a brewery day someplace.
Yes.
And just record.
Yeah. Someday.
Like a brewery day.
With that. Close up shop. Absolutely. James, thank you so much for having us. One last cheers. We really, really appreciate it. Get down here to Black Project because this place is pretty impressive in various ways. Thank you, James.
Thanks.